Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.
Good evening and welcome to The Web Show on the British Tech Network. I'm Paul Wheatley and I have a superb panel here with me this evening to discuss the ins and outs of HTML5. And I think it's more than likely that we'll touch on a bit of CSS3 as well, because I don't think the two can be avoided being kind of discussed together. So normally the way I work this when I'm introducing the panel guests is I would work my way down the country. But I have to say, Phil, I'm afraid I don't actually know where you're based. So we're going to start with you on the off chance you're further north than everybody.
I don't think so. I'm in Dollar in Clackmannanshire. I know I don't sound like I'm from there, but yeah, that's where I live.
I think you may actually be the most north, so that's good. Okay. I made a wild guess there. Your Twitter handle says making real-time web easy. Go on, give it a try. We think you'll be back for more. Does that accurately sum you up and your...
That's Pusher. That's who I work for.
Yes.
My Twitter handle's Legater, which is my surname,
LEGGETER.
So I'm a developer evangelist at Pusher, one of these job titles that you don't really know what you do. So Pusher as a service, our focus is to make it as easy as possible to use HTML5 WebSockets to add real-time functionality or data to your website.
Cool.
Or mobile app. And I've been working with this sort of technology for about 11 years. So before WebSockets were around, when we were still hacking with HTTP to make this sort of stuff possible.
Grant. And next one, Ord. I'm not even going to bother to read your Twitter description. could you quickly, in 140 characters or less, tell me a bit about yourself?
Yeah. I'm Zord Saunders. I live in Falkirk, work in Edinburgh. And I'm a front-end developer.
There we go. That was easy.
Yeah. Mostly JavaScript, but obviously HTML, CSS as well.
Yes, yes. We will be joined at some point during this show by Alan, who, those of you who have been listening since the beginning, was on our first episode. And his Twitter description is a cross between a Furby and David Essex. And that's a reasonably fair guess. Albeit he's got very short hair now, so it's... So, Liz. And finally, Russ, how are you this evening?
I'm very well. I'm good. The sun is kind of shining.
That's good.
But the sky is blue.
Well, then that's wild for this
and
time.
And hopefully so is our thinking.
And you're a web designer by day, a drummer, guitarist, bassist, vocalist in the evening. And not all at the same time, I would assume.
Sometimes the two things do come together. I mean, I try to make sure that the various web presences for bands that I've been in the past have been reasonable quality, but it's tough to work on something and make it look really nice when no one's paying you, and also
Indeed.
When you know you just can't get into it because you haven't got the time,
right.
Especially when you're self-employed. But there you go.
So we're all here this evening to discuss HTML5, as I said before. So just as a means of a quick intro before we kind of get into the roundtable discussion around HTML5, I've managed to find a little paragraph to describe what HTML5 is. So I'm just going to go through that and feel free to jump in if this is wildly inaccurate or wrong. So HTML5, or Hypertext Markup Language, is a formatting language that developers can use to create documents on the web. The latest edition, HTML5, has enhanced features for developers. The HTML5 language is specific rules that allow placement for a format of text, graphics, video, and audio on a web page. Developers can use these elements to produce web pages in unique and creative ways. Tags such as section, article, header enable the creator to make more efficient or intelligent web page. Users will not need a Flash plugin for video or audio content. Is that accurate, would you say, gents?
I would say.
Yes, or would you like to add anything extra to that?
That's what it's aiming to be. It may not be there yet.
We all say it's not actually finished yet.
Right, okay.
So but if you go to ishtml5readyyet.com, mm-hmm. you've got a counter, and above that is a big black no.
Right, okay. Presumably that gets checked on an hourly basis and they come back and tell us.
Maybe, but apparently it'll be ready in 3 years, 56 days, 3 hours, 49 minutes and 45 seconds.
Right, okay, so is this one of these things like that they actually say that it's going to be fully up and running in ridiculous amount of time.
That's apparently when the specification is supposed to be finalised.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that's when we can start using it in Angular.
Oh, no. Okay. People are using it already.
If you look at the source of his HTML5 ready yet, there's a couple of little Easter eggs in a comment, in comments. Mm-hmm. So just after saying no in a big H1, they've got, okay. So the answer really is kind of, sort of, but not quite really.
Yeah. Did the blurb about HTML5 anywhere say anything about web applications?
It does not, actually, no.
Yeah, because I think, I mean, as far as I'm aware, the HTML5 specification all started and came from a web application spec that eventually was kind of dropped or transformed. So for me, the purpose of HTML5 is more about making it possible to build real applications on the web and not about, I mean, content and structure kind of comes with it, but that isn't the core focus for me anyway.
Right, okay. So it was originally set out to just be web applications, and it has almost been kind of bent, in, for want of a better word, in a way so that it actually fits for what we need to do on the web? Is that where we're going?
I don't know, to be honest. I guess to build a rich internet application, then you need media, so video, the ability to do things like images, so canvas, and various things like that. And I think it's just all come together. But I don't know why web application 1.0 was dropped and HTML5 was decided upon to be a better name for it. It looks better on a t-shirt, maybe.
It's a very snazzy logo, that is.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, if they'd spent more time actually finalising it and getting it finished rather than making a beautiful kind of superhero-type logo, we might be a bit further down the road. You've kind of almost covered it there, but what exactly do you mean by HTML5? Because it's been thrown about a lot recently. And is it just this web standards that's then, as I said, been bent to work on in browsers and things like that? Or what do we actually mean by it? What's the core? What's at the core of it?
If you look at the, talking about the logo, if you look at the w3.org and their HTML5 logo page, the various things you can add to your superhero logo are offline and storage, connectivity in real time, multimedia, graphics, 3D and effects, device access, performance and integration, semantics, CSS3 and styling. So they're lumping all of that into the HTML5 logos.
So then,
that's a bit broad.
It is. So is that then? It kind of almost sounded like a framework then, to a degree.
That's what the W3.org want you to think. Yeah.
Is that accurate? I mean, is that where we need to be heading? Is that what we need to be aiming for?
HTML5 is, isn't it really all it is? It's the latest version of what we build for the web with. But HTML5 seems to kind of encompasses JavaScript. CSS3 and everything else, doesn't it?
That's how people are using the term. It's HTML5 is the new web 2.0.
It's become an umbrella term now rather than hypertext markup language, isn't it?
Yeah. If you go to w3.org/HTML/logo and scroll down, there's a potentially better description. So it says the technology, probably in an H1. It says... imagination meet implementation. HTML5 is the cornerstone of W3C's open web platform, a framework designed to support innovation and foster the full potential of the web. The full potential the web has to offer. So, you know, it's a framework. It's everything we need to build web applications, hopefully. And we're still not quite there yet, but we can more easily build real interactive, rich web applications than we could with HTML4.
But why is that? I mean, is it just? I mean, could we not do everything that we can currently do with HTML5 using JavaScript and HTML4, or is there extra stuff in there that we should be kind of harnessing?
I think there's obviously my focus is real time technology, so the connectivity part of that, and the main thing for me is WebSockets. So WebSockets are a good example of as looking at how we were trying to achieve things. So we might have heard of Comet, and we were trying to make persistent connections between a server and a web browser or a client and push information between the two. And it was done in a number of hacky ways in different browsers. So WebSockets are an HTML5 technology that actually solves a problem that we were trying to achieve in HTML4, but in HTML5 it solves it properly. So I think that's what we're doing. We're looking at the things we were trying to do, potentially in hacky ways, and standardize them so that all browsers implement them, and then it's easier for the developer to use and build these apps.
I've heard it described as paving the cow paths. If people are doing it anyway, we'll bake it into the standard.
Right, okay, so in which case, if all this stuff was already there and we're paving the cow paths, I take it then there's like performance benefits and things like that. Is that one of the big things about this?
So for WebSockets, again, it's my specialty, so it's the thing I'll talk about.
No, feel free, carry on.
Yeah. So with Comet, you used to use one HTTP connection and hold it open so that the server could push information from the server to the client, and then you would have to use a second HTTP connection to make calls from the client to the server to tell it to kind of change subscriptions or do new things. But WebSockets represent a single TCP connection, which is bidirectional. So you've got real-time communication between client, server, and client. So it's exactly that sort of thing. You know, it's because it's that one connection now, it's more efficient. Because there's not the HTTP overhead of headers, it's more efficient. So I think from that point of view, certainly with that part of HTML5, the connectivity part, it's definitely more efficient. I don't know a lot about CSS3 other than playing with it a little bit, but you know, obviously when you use CSS3, you get the benefits that the browser supports. You can use your graphics engine to do things because it's natively supported in the browser, whereas we used to do things, transitions and animations with just JavaScript, which wasn't as great at doing that. So you were getting the performance improvements from CSS3 that we used to do, or we used to try and hack using JavaScript.
And with things like rounded corners, you'd send half a dozen images down just to do rounded corners. I mean, I honestly don't know why people bothered.
It looks pretty. Yeah. Rounded corners are nice.
Because Apple like rounded corners. That's why it's in the CSS3 standard.
No, and rounded corners for CSS3 is, these days, one line of code. One line of CSS. Not jQuery plugins and different anti-alias PNGs and all sorts.
And I guess it also, you have to look at Flash as well, that we needed a plugin to play video. And it's an obvious thing that media on the web is massively important. So a browser needs to natively support the ability to play video.
Okay, so there is a concern that, you know, in the same way that the Flash splash screen of like 2001 was something that everybody wanted, and you know, even just now, everybody's talking about needing an Android or an iOS app. Is there a concern that perhaps HTML5 is just the latest fad, and it's just going to get dropped, or it's going to get changed in the same way that the web app spec was written and then changed in HTML5? Or is this definitely the way we're heading, and we can't get away from it? Or would we want to get away from it?
I think this is definitely the direction we're going in, because the internet has to keep, or the web has to keep, improving. That's one argument for it. But also, if you're building your application in HTML5, then you can do a lot more. You can reach a much bigger audience than you can if you're just sticking to a few operating systems, you know, like iOS or Android or something.
I think that's absolutely key. And again, that blurb around the technology for HTML5, it is an open web platform. So we're trying to create a platform that makes it easy for us to develop web applications, but also because it's a standard, it's implemented in browsers that run not only on desktop but on mobiles. And I guess any other kind of rendering engine, which would ultimately be a web browser. But it means that the technology can easily be ran, and the applications can easily be ran anywhere. If you look at Boot to Gecko by Mozilla, that means you've got a mobile device that offers ways of accessing the underlying technology running on the phone, but you write everything in JavaScript. It's a web platform, but running on a mobile device.
It's taking PhoneGap a step further, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly.
The reason that it's open is that I think that's the most important part, isn't it? It's free, so you don't have. We're not paying. Well, you've got to pay to house it, but you haven't got to pay for, you don't have to pay for Adobe HTML5 page maker in order to build your HTML5 applications.
So Russ, you touched on a good point earlier on there, where you were talking about, you know, that it was cross-platform, and that you're not just programming for Android or iOS, but not all browsers currently support the standard. And it's not standard yet, and it won't be for another 3 years, but isn't that a concern, that, you know, some people are implementing different elements of HTML5, arguably more so CSS3, differently?
It's not so much differently,
it's partially, and Internet Explorer not at all in some cases.
Yes.
Back to the old whipping boy.
Well, everyone's going to have their own ideas about how each bit should be displayed, or how stuff should be rendered. Everyone's rounded corners will look different, because we've got three or four major browsers, haven't we? So, you know, mm-hmm. How's it? We've got to come up with if there was one browser, there'd be no problem.
But they look differently. They do look slightly different in different browsers, but they're not sufficiently different, unless you want absolute pixel perfect, in which case you probably shouldn't be doing this. But they're all close enough.
Well, it's leaps and bounds from solutions in the past, where even JavaScript would run differently on different browsers. So I started, I don't know how old everyone else is, but so I graduated in 2001 and started doing JavaScript then, and we were targeting, you know, IE4, and IE4 would run differently, or you'd execute the same JavaScript and it would run differently on kind of IE4 on Windows NT than it would on Windows 95 or Windows 98. And, you know, that's just crazy. It's the same application running on different operating systems, yet it behaves differently. And then when you get to actually different vendors, then it would just get crazy, and you would have to go, well, okay, we're only going to support IE. Whereas now, because we've got a decent standard, it means that there will be some differences, but we're not always trying to work around them like we were previously. I mean, one of the reasons jQuery is so popular, not only because it's useful, but also because it hides away all the differences in browsers, whereas that benefit is slowly but surely disappearing.
Yes, but some of the older browsers are still supporting Flash. So, I mean, there is an argument out there that more machines... incidentally, I'm not for necessarily keeping Flash. I'm just trying to instigate some argument here. what would you say to the argument that Flash is installed on more hardware than machines who currently support HTML5?
That's where you get into polyfilling. Try and send the HTML5 audio, and it's a one-liner to pick up whether it's supported. If it's not supported, then you call in the Flash.
Is that
it sounds like a bad superhero comic, but yeah.
Yeah, but there's one little thing there. People liked the Flash.
Yes.
Some people do like Flash. Some people do.
I used to love it.
I've regularly had stand-up arguments in pubs about why Apple's evil, because somebody can't watch a particular video on a particular website because they don't have Flash in their iPad. So there is a lot of people out there that do like the Flash, and I don't necessarily mean the superhero. But it's supported in more places.
So Flash also has provided some of the innovation that's meant that HTML5 has some of the support it does. Going back to connectivity, but they had Flash. They've got Flash Socket, which is a TCP connection from the browser to the server. Interestingly enough, one of the fallbacks for WebSockets is to use a Flash Socket. So Flash has kind of led the way in some senses, and I guess it still does in some really interactive and video at the minute and animation. So there's still potentially a space for it.
So should we be pushing to have everybody's websites updated to HTML5 and rewriting everybody's websites? I mean, is that a strategy that should be being adopted?
Well, HTML4 is a subset of HTML5. So, I mean, if you change the doc type on an HTML4 document, you've got an HTML5 document per the absolute spec. So, you know, it's how much, I think it's when you get something new, as with the best way of doing these things, when something new comes around, it's not just rip it down and start again. Find out where you can use it. When you're doing something new, start putting it in.
that just being able to change the doc type does mean that you can phase these things in. You don't have to redesign everything and suddenly start incorporating all the nice things that HTML5 has. You can just add them over time, which of course makes it more cost effective.
So just for the people who don't understand what that is, what exactly would changing the doc type do? I mean, how would that impact the page?
Well, it's the very top line of an HTML document, should be, the doc type, which defines the type of the document. I mean, it does what it says on the tin.
So is that for the browsers to know what syntax to read and whatnot, yeah?
Yeah, apart from some very strict XML parsers you get, the main reason is to force IE in standards mode these days. That's pretty much all it does.
Okay, so I mean, what's taken so long? If we already discussed at the top of the show, and is HTML5 ready? And we're still saying 3 years, 56 days, 3 hours, 32 minutes, and 46 seconds. 5, 4.
It's getting closer. Days. It's getting closer.
what is taking so long? I mean, the way that we're talking here is everybody kind of knows what we're doing. It's a standard as much as a standard could be. Why is it going to take all this time?
IE7, IE8. Bits of IE9,
IE6.
Oh, that's dead. Hopefully,
actually, did you see the?
It'll never be dead. It'll never be dead.
Well, they deserve a linear base mobile linear presentation.
Did you see the article that there was a retailer called Kogan in Australia who was applying a 6.8% tax to anybody purchasing on IE7 or later?
Earlier,
yes.
Yeah,
it came up with a sign when you tried to purchase when you were running IE7 or earlier. It appears you or your system administrator has been in a coma for over 5 years and you're still using IE7. To help make the internet a better place, you'll be charged an extra 6.8% tax on your purchase. This is necessary due to the amount of time required to make web pages appear correctly in IE7.
You've seen the on the tax notice, it's delivered by the Department of Internet Justice.
Yes, more people should be doing that. Sorry, that was a bit of a tangent there, but I thought that was quite amusing.
I was going to say, I think if I suggested doing that to one of my clients, they probably wouldn't want to do it. I don't think it takes a certain kind of person to do that. I think.
Yeah, or company. So are we saying that the standard isn't a standard until all browsers that are currently considered to be the kind of the master for that range, so the latest version of Firefox and things like that, until they are up to a level that support HTML5, it will not be a standard. Is that how it works?
The official line is, I mean, the one is HTML5 ready yet? That's the countdown to when the HTML specification goes into final, which means something, I believe, in standardization processes, but not a lot to the rest of us.
Right,
so that's okay. When the specification is locked down and said, right, this specification is final. I mean, IE6 will still be around somewhere and
yes.
Still choking on every website under the sun. But
I've seen IE5.5 in the wild recently, actually, as well.
Really? Did you get a picture?
Mm. It's in my other half's primary school. They use WordPress and they can't use the latest version of WordPress because IE5.5 doesn't support it. So I had to downgrade her version of WordPress so that she could still edit it in the school.
Wow. Is that secure?
Pass. Yes. It's the councils.
If you want to cut that out, you can.
I can say, can't you install Chrome Frame? Because you can install that without admin privileges.
Can you really? Oh, right.
I think so, yeah.
So where would you find that?
Yeah, just search for Chrome Frame. Yeah, and then I don't know if the WordPress does it, but you probably need to install the plugin. Mm. But there's just a meta tag which says render using Chrome rather than IE. So it runs as a, I guess, an ActiveX control. Mm-hmm. So it just means you think you're using IE, but really you're using Chrome.
Right. So you can find that at developers.google.com/chrome/chrome-frame. You can get around older legacy browsers. Mm-hmm. Sorry, that was another little tangent there by me. So,
I wanted to. So, I mean, we're saying, like, what's taking so long? But if you think about the speed at which the technology is moving forward in the client now, it's amazing in comparison to how long we waited to kind of get here. You know, just to say a couple of years ago, the time we waited for any sort of advancements in browser technologies was far too long. But because we've now got browser wars and we've got people trying to, you know, people, I guess, yeah, the browsers fighting against each other to make the most performant browser. We've got them fighting against each other to, I guess, implement these specifications before the other. Then we're really benefiting from it. The developers are, and we can build these cool applications. Whereas before, we had basically IE dominating the market. IE6 was the bee's knees, and they didn't need to do anything. So we just hadn't seen any progression in client technologies, but we have now. So I don't think it's taking long at all. I think it's amazing how fast this stuff's moving forward and how quickly we're seeing new APIs becoming available, you know, like gamepad APIs and battery APIs all available to us. You know, really quickly these things are being made available in browsers. So I think it's great.
I saw a talk from one of the Google engineers who does the Google Doodles, and he was running the presentation he'd written all in HTML, and it was running on Safari on his Mac because it had a faster frame rate, but he was feeding in some sensor data to the the one that does the spirit level. My mind's just gone completely blank there. Sorry.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. I can't remember off the top of my head.
The attitude sensor.
Right.
It's feeding in data from the attitude sensor, which was only available through Chrome. So you had Chrome sending the attitude data to Safari, which had the faster refresh rate to do his presentation, which is just, I mean, that's, they're all around about the same thing, but one slightly ahead of the other, and he was just putting the two together there.
So but I think yeah, the advancements we've got is brilliant at the minute.
So the other APIs and things like that, just touching on APIs, so such as the ones that do access, like, for example, the camera for to do, I don't know, QR reading or something like that, or access the location, all that kind of stuff. Is that would that all be part of the HTML5 standard at some point when W3C eventually finishes APIs? Would that be the intention, and that's why it's taken so long? I appreciate your point that it's not necessarily taking so long.
I'm not sure where these JavaScript APIs fit into who's holding the spec on those, actually, now you come to mention it. I don't know, yeah.
How much of it is built into the standard, and how much of it is just little extra bits and pieces that people have built?
So is that it? Is it just going to, you know, we've got HTML5, but it's just going to continue to grow little arms and legs and roots and things like that for the next 3 years? And so the HTML5 we know now may be an entirely different beast in 3 years.
Entirely possible, yeah. And then we'll start on HTML6.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure about this. So, again, WebSockets. WebSockets were kind of just an API or a protocol, and then an API, and then they became part of HTML5. I think the question at the start of the show about CSS3, and we need to talk about CSS3 with HTML5, whereas that is now bundled under HTML5. So I think HTML5 is just this amazing web platform, open web platform, and we are just seeing all these APIs and things that people are asking for and being bundled under this. And I guess, I don't know for sure, but I'm guessing that's what one of the reasons why there isn't really an end date on it. I mean, for instance, I was at OnGameStart a year ago, and someone from the W3C was there. So OnGameStart was an HTML5 games event in Warsaw, and there was people there from the W3C who wanted to speak to the developers there and find out what they wanted to see in the specification. So it's clearly still moving, and they're still clearly still listening and looking for new things to add.
We've kind of went over what the browser support is. What do we mean by HTML5 now? So,
on the browser support, if you want to know what a browser can support, then caniuse.com is just an enormous range of these different things: CSS, HTML5, SVG, JavaScript APIs. And other, you can just type in what you're looking for in their search box, and it'll give you sort of the browser support matrix for it. It's a really useful reference. no substitute for doing genuine feature detection, but it's as a reference work, it's really good.
Cool.
That's caniuse.com.
And so we're now joined by Alan White. He's finally decided he could be bothered to join the show, even though he's been given 2 weeks' notice, but that's fine. Hi, Alan. How are you doing?
Not bad, Paul. Apologies for the late arrival. Kids in gala week, so I've been otherwise occupied.
No worries, no worries. So I was just about to ask, though, we've kind of covered browser support. We've kind of covered by what do we mean by HTML5 and things like that. So what's the strategies for using it just now? How could we be using it just now? And I know we've kind of covered this earlier on, but what should we be doing as developers to push forward and embrace this?
With regards to the web and any technology, I'm a big fan of keep it simple. With regards to anything that I'm doing, I literally mark my documents up sensibly, making use of, for example, sections, sort of new semantic elements. I have to be honest, I haven't coded up sort of many articles recently. I've seen some really badly coded HTML5. I'm a big fan of like sort of keep it simple and then layer things over the top. If you're sort of going into building a snazzy new application, then you might have specific technologies that you're focusing on, and therefore you're already going to have a pretty good idea of sort of the polyfills you're going to want to use in this, that, and the next thing. But as for Joe Public out there, or someone that's just learning to build websites, or even someone that has been building them for years and not made the leap to HTML5, do it. There's nothing holding you back. It makes more sense when you're building things. I mean, I still use divs for dividing up a page, but I use sections and all that kind of stuff for adding more semantics to the areas that I'm actually working on. I'm making use of headers. I'm making use of sort of all the new HTML5 form controls and things like that. There's no reason not to use these things.
Now, there is some usability problems with some of the HTML5 form controls. I knew you were going to ask me that. I just said that, and then I realised that I hadn't wrote down any notes to remind me what those usability problems were. But I did come across a few of them. It was basically around the watermark. So when you're putting in something into a field and then you click into it and you start to type something, you kind of the watermark disappears.
Placeholder text.
Placeholder text.
Placeholder. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There is other things around that, you know, like slider controls and things like that, the new things that all the kids are using. There's concerns over that. I'm not necessarily saying that we shouldn't be using those things. There just should be concerns and some kind of things left to one side just now, in my opinion, until we kind of get them further defined, or perhaps be used in certain situations where they make sense. So, I mean, for example, a slider control perhaps, in my opinion, makes more sense on a, you know, on a little mobile device, whereas arguably a slider control doesn't necessarily fit quite nicely on a desktop device, people with motor functions and things like that.
Have you covered the fact that all of these, certainly most of them actually fall back to just the default text field?
Yes, no, we haven't mentioned that actually, but yeah, that's very very true.
So, I mean, my take on that would be specifically stick to the ones that you know have a sensible default or fallback. And yeah, by all means, use the other ones. There are ways of making things accessible. But I, as far as sort of anything that I would go implement, I don't think I would go crazy with that. I think I would be sticking, whilst I'm learning, to the things that I know have a sensible fallback. So it's don't be afraid of using these things, but think about what you're using them for. Because, I mean, you get real benefits. I mean, even things like sort of form type email or input type email or telephone. Sort of on Apple devices, I can't speak for Android, but it'll actually change your keyboard. Little things like that, you can leverage the experience for the end user, and it takes nothing to do, and it has a sensible fallback. So, sorry, I've been here 5 minutes and I'm ranting already.
No, it's good.
But yeah, with some of these things, the device functionality with the keyboard things, you can't really do that any other way. That's got to be done natively. But for a lot of these things, are things like a date field, you can add in a date picker widget, So again, you do your detection, you say this device claims to support date fields, right, we'll let the device handle the date field. This device doesn't, we'll send down a JavaScript polyfill. Just on the subject of polyfills, it confused me for a while what polyfills were. So just for the benefit of the listener who doesn't understand, it was a term coined by Remy Sharp, who basically described it as like putting polyfiller over a crack. So polyfiller is a wall, it's for smoothing walls.
All right. I'm still none the wiser, so what does that relate to Webster?
The polyfill is it's a generic term for anything where you're covering a lack of functionality.
I see, right.
So if the browser doesn't natively support it, you polyfill it.
So while we're on forms then, am I right in saying that there's some kind of in-page validation as part of the HTML5 spec? Is that right?
There is, yes. I've had a play around with it. It's not the easiest API to get to grips with, and I was using it in Firefox, and it's pretty ugly. So it's not. It's so much easier to do it with JavaScript at the moment, just to add in your extra elements and that kind of thing. I don't think it's not sexy enough. It's not got enough traction, so I don't think there's been enough developer attention on it.
It's very much a work in progress then at the moment.
From what I've seen, yeah.
And just again, while we were touching on accessibility there, and something that we didn't really touch on in browser support, was with this whole nested hierarchy in that you can have more than one H1 on a page. Is there any? I mean, it's maybe something that none of us really know much about, but screen readers. How do screen readers are going to deal with that? I mean, are we still going to have to wait a little while until they catch up to HTML5 and JAWS isn't going to get confused with having two H1s on the page? I may have just thrown out a question that nobody has an answer to, so I apologise. But
no, I was speaking to a friend of the podcast, Craig McFeet, about this. Mm-hmm. He was looking into sectioning recently and the new outlining algorithms. They're a bit of a mess at the moment. He said some of them don't support it, other of them support bits of it and things. It's fairly lumpy in terms of proper support. They will still work. I mean, if you still mark up, you can put your markup into the page correctly, mm-hmm. It will still read them. But it's
not ideal.
Not ideal. And test yourself.
That's a bit of the current story of HTML5, isn't it? Some of it's a little bit lumpy, and some of it works, and some of it's a bit difficult to use. And some of it kind of works.
I mean, the three main things, and I'm sorry, I'm going back to this Flash thing here, but the three main things that I see used across the web that utilize the Flash plugin is video files, which we know can be covered by HTML5s, multiple file uploads, which you know can be covered by HTML5s, and the big one, does anybody know if restaurant websites can be covered with HTML5? That was supposed to be a joke, gentlemen. Sorry.
Yeah. I know that a few years ago, everyone in cycling was using Flash websites. I think it got fashionable with that there as well. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, be good to see the back of some of those.
I have a quick question, actually. Mm. We haven't really mentioned the progressive enhancement.
That's true. Sorry, that isn't the show notes. Nobody said
progressive enhancement. And I think Alan touched on it in terms of, you know, keep it simple, mark it up, and then build up your page. But we haven't really kind of discussed it. And I think that's kind of what the polyfills do for us. They allow for progressive enhancement. But also, I think, again, you know, the real-time web technology stuff, you kind of layer it on if it's available. And I think you have, if you want to have good support for all browsers, you know, and you are worried about supporting IE6 and IE7 and IE8 and any Microsoft technology, then you do need to think about layering on this functionality rather than just relying on it. Again, as Alan said, if you know your target audience, you know your users, and you know they'll have a certain standard of browser, then just go for it. Then use the technology that they'll have some detection which just says, sorry, this site isn't going to work for you, But so I think progressive enhancement is massively important to HTML5, and there's libraries like Modernizer that let us do this detection and work with that.
Yeah,
I think another key aspect is if you're developing in a mobile environment, then yeah, you cannot speak for a lot of there's so many different devices. However, if you're going for the common platforms, then you can be reasonably assured. And I'm probably digging a hole for myself here, but for example, if you're developing for Safari, like all of these things are available. You don't need to worry about the polyfills and things like that in a mobile environment. You still need to do it. If anything, progressive enhancement is more important when you go into the mobile browser, but for different reasons. But the likes of all the form controls and stuff like that, you can be reasonably assured they're going to be working.
Yeah, progressive enhancement is, it just solves so many problems for you. It's been said before, it's going to be said again on this podcast, I'm sure, is that if you do clean semantic valid markup and you do progressive enhancement, it's going to sort out most things for you. The rest, once you get those right, the rest is a lot easier. And those aren't difficult if you do them right from the start.
It's actually, to my shame, it's the first time I've heard of the, earlier this afternoon is the first time I've heard the phrase progressive enhancement. And yeah, I've been doing it all along. As Alan said, if you do it right, then you're laughing.
So, I'm a young developer. I'm not, but if I'm just coming out of high school and I want to get into what is the latest technology and be learning the latest thing, can you suggest some books or blogs or speakers or any recommendations of how somebody might want to get in this area? Oh, I might be an old developer, an old hat, and I'm just kind of feeling a bit out of touch with all this. Where can I go to find out some more information about this?
Yeah. In terms of books, there's the A Book Apart series. They did HTML5 for web designers and CSS3 for web designers. They're brilliant introductions. They're short. You can read them in an evening, and they're very well written. So that if you don't know anything really about this, go to those two first.
I think lynda.com has, if you're a member of lynda.com, has some videos about HTML5 and moving from where you are now to HTML5 and what you can do with it and things like that.
There's also resources like HTML5 Doctor. They've pretty much, since the beginning of HTML5, followed it, and they almost have it's like a surgery where you can ask questions about HTML5 and they'll actually go through and give explanations of how things are used and how you can go about doing things. So I would say it's a very, very good stop. I'm just trying to find out if it's doctor.com or not. Give me one second.
Well, we'll put all these links in the show notes, actually, so you can pick up, because we have mentioned quite a few tools and websites in this show, so you'll be able to pick them all up in our show notes there.
Yeah. So HTML5 rocks. That's a statement and a website. They do some really good stuff in terms of things that inspire you. They'll show some amazing, I guess, WebGL things. You go, how did they do that? And that can be, and sometimes it might be quite advanced, but it might be a really good way of getting you inspired and digging into it. There's also a weekly newsletter, HTML5weekly.com, by Peter Cooper, who also does JavaScript Weekly and a Ruby Weekly newsletter as well. The HTML5 Weekly, for me, is an essential resource to subscribe to. And it just gives you, links to tutorials or important things about changes in standards and things like that. Again, a really great place to find out and, again, be inspired about how people are using this technology.
Grand. This podcast and all the others on the British Tech Network wouldn't be possible without UK2.net. They've kept the British Tech Network afloat for over 3 years, and they're brilliant, and you should use them. We have a whole pile of voucher codes for various discounted services from UK2. But if you could head over to BritishTechNetwork.com and click on the link down the left-hand side that will send you across to UK2, fill your shopping basket with all the different things that you need, and then put in some of these codes to get some money off. So if you pop in British Tech DNS at checkout, gives you free DNS for 2 years. British Tech Domains gives you 20% off your domain name registration. British Tech VPN gives you 50% off your first month's VPN charges. British Tech Server gives you £50 off any gigabit server. It's on any contract length, but that's an online only deal. You can't phone up and get that one. And British Tech VPS gives you your first month free with a VPS server. So there you go. That's where UK2, they support British Tech, and you should support them. Thanks very much. So, moving on now. We have some listener questions. Now, at the end of every show, we request that listeners send in their questions for the following show, but we've actually had a few of the questions have come in that haven't necessarily been relating to a particular topic. So we're going to change this section to basically be, if you have a question relating to web development, web design, anything to do with the internet at all, fire it in, and we'll just have a bit of a mishmash of questions at the end. So these questions aren't all necessarily relating to HTML5 and CSS3, albeit a couple of them are. So we'll just start off at the top. Gentlemen, his first question comes in from Gordon Stewart. He asks, all boxes are square to the browser. What's the best way to fake a triangle box?
There is a website, CSS Arrows, that you maybe want to go and have a look at. And essentially what you can do is you set... it's using a weird sort of display feature of borders. They actually have angled corners, so what you can actually do is set three borders to transparent, and then set whatever size of triangle you want on the other border, set a color on it, and you will get a triangle.
Grant, that was CSScorners.com. Sorry, Alan, you're siloing in a little bit with your audio. We're having trouble kind of catching you, but I think you said CSScorners.com gives you an explanation out there.
CSSArrowPlease.com.
So if you head over there, and gentlemen, would you concur, or is there other ways that we could do it?
I'd never heard of that, but I'm just looking at CSS Arrow Please now.
Never tried to fake a triangle box.
No. I'm assuming it's maybe for some kind of leading your eye down the page or something like that, instead of using graphics. But that seems as good as any, or does anybody have any better suggestions? Can anybody beat Alan's?
No, I think he's won that one.
Good. Next one comes in from Gary, no last name given. Should I be nesting H1s now considering limited browser support? This kind of relates to something we were discussing earlier.
Yeah, we did cover that with the new document outline.
Yeah.
Probably shouldn't be doing it if you've got the option, but the reason they brought in the H1 nesting, the heading nesting, was so that you could have the same content consumed in different places. So you've got an article, and the title of your article is marked up as an H1 when it's on the full article page, but then does it need to be marked up as an H2 when there's a list of articles? I think if it makes your life a lot easier for your CMS, then do it, but don't do it as an outright strategy from the start.
If I was to be honest, I still mark things up the way that I was marking things up previously.
In other words, to not use H1s.
I'll use multiple H1s on a page, but I will still try and give it sort of semantic structure, because screen readers and things like that will still read out H1s and H2s, etc. So don't use them blindly, would be my argument. Use them responsibly and think about the structure of your document.
But don't, I was going to use some foul language there, which I'll avoid now, but right, I'll start again. Don't go out of your way to avoid nesting them. If it's going to be a lot of effort to avoid nesting them, then just nest them.
Cool. This next one comes in from an Ian Gray. What prefixes should I use? What prefixes should I be using for CSS3? WebKit, default, Mozilla, and sometimes O. I'm reading that. That could be taken in a few ways, and I'm sorry, Ian, if we get this wrong, but I'm reading that as in when you're putting in CSS3, when you have to use WebKit, Mozilla, Opera, kind of prefixes to CSS3 questions, should we just be using those four, or is there others, or should we only be using WebKit and Mozilla?
All of them. Next question.
Right, I was going to say, yeah. I was going to say, use all of them.
So all four of them, there isn't any more. There should only be those four.
The most important thing to remember when doing that is use the native selector last.
Yeah.
That's the important thing to remember.
This blew up recently, a couple of months ago, because now, who was it? It was Firefox, or was it Opera? It was Firefox or Opera decided they were going to support the WebKit prefix, because lots of people were just putting in the WebKit prefix. Right, okay. I'll dig out the links on that, and we can put it in the show notes.
Okay, no problem. The next one comes in from Stephen. Should I be using Google Web Fonts? It's a bit of an open-ended question because it doesn't give anything. Do I use them in a poster? But I'm assuming he means on his website.
Why not?
This is a question from me here. Does that not cause more of a page load? Would that not cause some slowdown on mobile devices?
There is a bit of a delay, but if you want the font and you don't mind the delay, then go for it. Again, check it, make sure it looks right, make sure you're happy with it, and benchmark it. If it's on a personal profile site and you want all the fonts and you want the dancing cats and everything, go for it.
And who doesn't?
But if it's a corporate website, you probably want to avoid it.
Right. Okay.
I was going to say there are speed problems with not just Google Web Fonts, but all of these web font providers, because you're downloading, you know, a font or the glyphs that you need to render what's on the page. So they can all cause speed problems. But if it's as you said, if it's what you want, it's what you want.
So I was going to say related to that, there's a guy called Ilya Greek. I can't pronounce his surname. Grigorik from I think he works for Google Analytics, and he's done a number of good talks on speeding up your website. And I know there's a lot of content at the minute about that, but we can provide a link to his slides from HTML5 DevConf. He doesn't talk about fonts specifically, but he's talking about any external resources and ways of speeding up websites. And I think that's, although it's not HTML5 specific, it's as we're using a lot more resources within our web apps, then it's really key to developing HTML5 apps.
Okay. This next question comes in from Fonts Noob. And he or she asks, how can I convert Flash video to HTML5 video?
Take your original video and turn it into something you can use in a video tag.
Okay. that does seem like the simplest answer, but I'm assuming here that they've got an SWF file and they want to take that SWF file and put it into a converter of some kind, so it punts out something that can be used in a video tag. So
they've got an FLV.
Sorry, an FLV, yeah, sorry.
An FLV. Mm-hmm. If you're the one who's created the FLV, then you should be able to use something like Adobe Media Encoder and to change it into whatever you need.
Okay.
From HTML5 Weekly, or was it JavaScript Weekly this week, there's something called Shumway, Shumway, and it's an attempt to create a standardized approach to loading and parsing SWF files in JavaScript. So that's also a solution.
Okay, and the final question for this evening before we close up the shop. This one is from Phil and Jane. I don't know if they wrote the alternate characters separately, but I have an idea for a website. Should I buy all the TLDs, or the top level domains? Sorry?
I guess the idea.
Yeah, so I'm assuming that question basically means they have the name of a website which we'll just, for argument's sake, call Lolcats, and they want to know whether they need to buy .com, .co.uk, .net, so on and so forth. So is that necessary?
My answer to that is, how much do you value and believe in what you're doing? Mm-hmm. If you believe that you've got something that you really need to protect, then yes, buy them all. However, I would also argue that if you build one website and build it well, and you doing proper SEO, you've got better content, you have a niche, then people will find you whether you've got 10 domains or one.
And you also could get into a situation like Joel Spolsky did when with Trello. They chose the name Trello, because it was available. That was it. That was their number one criteria for their name, is they had to be, all the TLDs had to be available, or a significant portion of them. So you can end up with a silly name if you want all of them.
Right, okay. So I guess the answer to that question is it entirely depends on how much you believe in your idea. If you want to spend a ridiculous sum of money going and buying all the TLDs because you think it's got legs, then do it. If not, or you think it will support itself just on one.com, then don't. Yep.
Oh, if you want to be big in Germany, then you've got to have the DE. Right. .de. The Germans won't look at a .com. Yeah. They want a .de. Second largest registry after .com, I believe.
Oh. Okay. So if you have any questions, anything to do with the web whatsoever, please fire them in. It's britishtechnews@gmail.com. And we will try and answer them in the next show. So finally, this evening, our cool things. I understand that I just kind of threw this on you all last night, so apologies. But I think we've got everybody's got something here, so I'll just start as the list goes down. So Ord, first of all, do you have a cool thing for us this evening?
Yeah, the new Firefox on Android. If you've got an Android phone, you'll want Firefox Beta. If you've got a tablet, you'll need to use the Aurora nightly builds. But it's now a native Android app, and it is head and shoulders the best mobile browser I've used. It's fast, and it supports all kinds of goodness.
And I'm assuming that's free as well.
Yeah.
Yes. Very good. Very good. Ross, what do you have for us?
In a recent update to IA Writer for the Mac, which is a text editor, simple text editor, it allows you. It's always allowed you to. It's always had nice support for Markdown, which allows you to write HTML very quickly, but. What they always used to have, well, they still do. They used to have an export to HTML, but now if you've written a load of text in Markdown and you're ready to put it into your blog, or you're going to put it into an HTML document, you can now select all the text, go up to Edit, and click Copy HTML, and then you can paste it into your HTML editing application, and it'll all be formatted for you.
Very nice. Yeah. And how much is that?
That's a good question. That's a very good question. I will find out. I will find out for you while Phil is doing his pick.
Okay, Phil.
Okay, I'm going to cheat a bit here and be salesy. So pusher.com is obviously very cool. So yeah,
we even got the T-shirt, mate.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so if kind of the WebSocket stuff and real time functionality, notifications, chat, activity streams interest you, then our service is really useful to get started really quickly with that. We've got a free sandbox plan, which is supports 20 connections and like 100,000 messages a day, 20 simultaneous connections. And I'll also say, if anyone emails me at phil@pusher.com and lets me know that they heard me say this here, then I'll give you 3 months access, a bootstrap plan for nothing.
Superb. What an offer. Very good, yep. Very good. Thank you very much for that. Much appreciated. Okay. Ross, you found out the price meantime.
Yes, it's $8.99,
right, okay. Yeah. And finally, Alan, what have you got for us?
I'm going to give the web standards curriculum, which is done by Opera. It was sort of done in collaboration with the Yahoo Developer Network several years ago. But for anybody that's sort of, I keep on going back to basics with HTML because I really do believe in it. And for anyone out there that's sort of just starting out, or even if you're sort of been in the game for years, there's loads of stuff in there to learn, and it'll take you all the way through sort of the beginnings of semantics and sort of, I can't recommend it highly enough. It's really, really, really good. And I've got another one. I've been trying to look it up. For the person that was talking about CSS3 prefixes, there's a thing called prefix-free, which is done by Lee Varun. It's leveroo.github/prefix-free, but it'll be in the show notes, and it's really useful. It enables you to write prefix-free CSS, and it'll do the dirty work for you.
That's very good. Cool. Very cool. Okay, thank you very much, Alan, and thank you very much, everybody else. Now, we've just got one last thing to do, is just to go around the horn, and where can we get a hold of you all, gentlemen? So we'll start just the same way around as we went for the cool thing. So, Ord, where can we get a hold of you, mate?
I'm on the Twitters at Colonel_Spons. I won't bother spelling it, just put it in the show notes.
No problem. Russ, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at SFDrummer.
And Phil?
Yeah, I'm at Legato, so that's LEGGETTER, or I still do email, so that's phil@pusher.com.
Alan, where can we find you?
Yeah, I'm available on Twitter as Kaz & Co.
And I am Paul Wheatley, which is Paul Wheatley. If you want to get a hold of us, as I mentioned before, via email with any questions about the show, comments about the show, or anything like that, it's britishtechnetwork@gmail.com. Or if you want to follow the network, it's British Tech News on Twitter. But most importantly, if you've liked what you've heard, and you want to give us a review on iTunes and some lovely stars and a lovely message, we'll be forever grateful. Ratings really, really help us get up the charts, and the higher we are on the charts, the more people download us, and so on and so forth. So that would be fantastic if you could do that. That's everything. I don't have anything else to say. Anybody else got anything exciting that they want to add to the end of the podcast before we close? We'll take that as a no. Okay, thank you very much, gents. I will see you in 2 weeks, where we will be discussing the cookie directive. So get your questions in around that. Thank you very much, and good night.